What is the UK government's recently published long-term plan for housing, and does it address the fundamental barriers to house building?
And how is February's plan different from its predecessor, published only 8 months before? I'm David Marlowe.
And I'm Mike Spicer. You're listening to LED Confidential, the podcast that lifts the lid on those intractable, enduring challenges facing those of us working in and on local economic development and placemaking today.
And a warm welcome to the second LEDC Espresso Shot of March 2024. Short but hopefully sharp insights into key issues facing us in local economic development. Now, of course, I mean, the UK's, I suppose I can call it, lamentable record at delivering new housing at anything like the scale that we need is something of a staple of LED Confidential. But Mike, what's new?
So yeah, in February, we had yet another tranche of housing policy announcements under the banner of long-term plan for housing. And I'll just cycle through some of those measures before we dissect them, I guess, and think about what's new and what isn't. There's a new consultation now on changes to planning policy for brownfield development. So giving greater priority to brownfield development in local plans, being less bureaucratic, more flexible in applying policies that halt house building on brownfield land. And that's a direct quote, by the way, from the DLUHC website. And for planning authorities in England's 20 largest cities and towns, they're to be made to follow a brownfield presumption. So similar to the presumption in favour of sustainable development that already exists. There's also mooted to be an expansion of the Affordable Homes Guarantee Scheme. Also some hints that Michael Gove, the Secretary of State at DLUHC, is pushing for cuts in stamp duty in the next budget, which as we record is, I think, only a week away, and an extension of the Mortgage Guarantee Scheme to cover first-time buyers with a 1% deposit, and also a new foreign ownership levy on overseas owners of residential property in the UK. So there's a kind of a bit of a ragbag of stuff there. Some of it is going out to consultation. Some of it presumably is just lobbying by DLUHC to Treasury ahead of the budget. Some of it a kind of rehashing of things that have been announced before. But I thought it was worth bringing up in this episode, David, because it feels like it wasn't that long ago since we recorded an episode, didn't we, where we went through the long-term plan for housing. And checking back through the back catalogue, in fact, it was as recently as our August 2023 catch-up. And so not that long ago, when we covered the series of announcements on housing that DLUHC had made over the summer. And just to recap the key points from that, you may remember that there were some moves to bolster capacity within the planning system, and potentially a fund called the Planning Skills Delivery Fund that was intended to do that. But as we covered in a subsequent episode, that turned out to be a strange beast, a kind of competitive fund for planning capacity that sort of was a sort of one-downmanship type competition, wasn't it? You had to prove that you were sufficiently catastrophic as a planning authority in order to qualify for any sort of financial support. So I'm guessing for most local authorities, that may not be a major source of funding there. And you may remember the super squad team of expert planners that were supposed to descend on places like Cambridge to help them with their expansion plans. Thinking back to August 2023, that's what some of the measures announced then were. So over the last week or so, it doesn't feel like a massive move on from there. What do you think, David?
Yeah, I mean, I had a look at this in preparation for today. You know that I am a bit of a skeptic of how government is setting about doing things. And I suppose the first thing I would say to our colleagues, both decision makers and practitioners in the field, is to come back to the major issue of devolution. You know, in a sense, why is government itself taking it upon itself to put these things out into the policy landscape when it could so much easier and more appropriately be decided at city, region, or mayoral combined authority scale, and they could have their own long-term plans for housing, and they could do their own thing about, you know, mortgage guarantees and presumptions about brownfield permissions and so on. Because once government gets its grubby paws on these things, it just ends up being a little bit incoherent. So to come back to one of the things that you rightly mentioned, there is a consultation going on about the presumption of, or about improving brownfield delivery. I think the end date is sometime around the end of March. I urge our listeners to actually respond, because there is some absolutely bizarre issues that government is going to do unless we do persuade it to change its mind, or persuade it a post-general election government. So, for example, you're right. There is a different regime, a different presumption of brownfield delivery for 20 urban uplift areas, which are supposedly the 20 biggest urban areas in England. But actually, do they make sense? Because they are on a local authority area only. So the urban uplift for Greater Manchester, for example, applies only to Manchester City Council's geography. Whereas, as we know from our episode, for example, with Paul Dennett last month, the mayor of Salford, actually Salford has a huge amount of brownfield land and a huge amount of potential for development, and it can contribute to Greater Manchester's housing need, as can Trafford, for example. But this consultation would suggest that actually the uplift is only in Manchester City, and I can go through each of the 20 and say, why on earth are they doing this? Secondly, it's brilliant that you mentioned the super squad approach to places like Cambridge, but Cambridge is not an urban uplift area. And indeed, there are actually no urban uplift areas in two of the major pan-regional partnership growth corridors, Thames Estuary or Thames Gateway, or Oxford to Cambridge. So it's a sort of few screws loose of a well-oiled machine, is what I would say. And I think a little bit like what you're suggesting, it's a bit of a hodgepodge with no real sense that the country will change gear and start delivering the quantity and quality of homes in the right place at the right price.
So, something that I thought that really caught my eye, David, was some of the reaction actually from the construction sector. And something, I can't remember who it was who said it, but one of the major house builders said, you know, that when they looked at these proposals, it had the strong whiff of a London-centric decision maker at its heart. And I think the reason that he or she said that was because the volume house builders, those companies that are responsible for an oversized share of housing delivery, actually play quite a small role in London. The volume house builders are not all that active in London compared to other places in the country. And if you can think of the major names in house building, they're typically not London-based. They're typically from other parts of the country originally. And so this idea that you can achieve volume house building without greenfield development is somewhat insensitive to the realities of how the construction sector is optimized for delivery outside of London, and in particular that brownfield sites aren't always that great for doing volume house building on, for a variety of reasons, but often they have complexities of ownership. The sites are typically smaller in any case, and perhaps a bit more difficult logistically to achieve density on sometimes. So, I mean, this is something that we've covered in a previous episode. And if you go onto our website, we've got an article in there about how difficult it is in reality to achieve density without greenfield development. So do check that out. But I think that the reaction of the industry says it all, that this is a sort of set of tired ideas. It won't make much difference. And it actually doesn't address some of the big barriers that construction companies see, in particular, some of the core shortfalls and shortcomings within the planning system, both in terms of planning capacity, which we spoke about earlier, but also essentially the kind of ad hoc, risky, inconsistent nature of it, which, you know, works against volume house building.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to close it there, but a really interesting look. And I suppose my appeal to our colleagues and our listeners is to pick up your point. Yeah, make sure your developer forum or your construction forum is active and you know what would actually stimulate the local housing market there. And make sure that as we get to the next government, you know, city regions and mayoral combined authority type of sub-regions have their own long-term housing plans and have some sense of what would really stimulate delivery of them. I hope you enjoyed our quick look at the government's announcement on long-term housing. As ever, you can access all things LED Confidential over on our website, www.ledconfidential.co.uk. Connect with our bonus material, tell us what you think, send us your suggestions for future episodes, and let's have a conversation about long-term housing delivery. Till the next time.